Some things were meant to go together, like ham and bread, or peanut butter and jelly, or like cake and ice cream. I mean, that's that really. And some things don't really mix well. Oil and water. Try as you might, they are not going together. And square pegs do not fit into round holes. It doesn't work. But I felt like a square peg several years ago when I had finished my coursework at the university. I'd finished my degree and graduated. A lot of my friends were getting married, some of them within a week of the graduation. They had come to school, they got their degree, and they had got their spouse, and they were ready to go. And I graduated. I didn't have a spouse. I didn't even have a prospect in 1995. Nothing was on the radar. There were no planes flying in my zone. And so I really felt like a square peg. In fact, I just decided the best thing for me to do was to continue my education. So I enrolled in the school seminary, and I continued school for two more years. And I did happen to meet a young gal at that time, and we dated for quite a while, and then we tearfully parted ways. And so I finished 2 years later my seminary training, and I still did not have a spouse. And at that time, I didn't think it was that big a deal. I thought, well, I'll just go and start ministering, and the Lord will provide me a spouse along the way. But I was a square peg in a ministry world where they were looking just for round pegs to go in those round holes. Because they wanted somebody, especially a young seminary graduate, nobody wanted to hire me. I was young, I was green, I had no experience, and on top of that, I had no spouse. I was in trouble. So ministry and being single did not mix. It did not feel like it wasn't going to go together. In fact, friend today ended up ministering in a town that was just a few hundred miles from where he happened to minister in Northern California. He's a friend today, but he did not want anything to do with me unless I was married. Come back and see me. Whew. Nice fella. He meant well. But that wasn't God's plan. And so, hey, sometimes things do not seem to go together well. And if you've been in Christian circles for a while, one of the biggest hang-ups Christians have is how to fit faith and works together. Are they supposed to be like oil and water, that they're just like two different separate entities in Christianity? They don't fit. Or are they more like peanut butter and jelly, and they just slide together perfectly? What is the arrangement? Is it, when it comes to being the right kind of Christian, do I need faith or do I need works? And this is bigger than Catholics and Protestants. James is saying this is really essential to your understanding of Christianity. It isn't just something out there, you know, if you want to get in the theological debate. No, this is about practical Christian living. This is about how real faith behaves. And is it going to be a matter of my faith, or is it going to be a matter of my works that please God? Which one is it? And so James pulls this apart, and he's really answering some objections, because he's just laid into the people in the end of chapter 1, where he says, it's not the person that hears the word, but the person who does it. Be ye doers of the word, James 1:22, and not hearers only. He wants you to do it. Then he's just talked for 13 verses about what you're supposed to do to the poor guy that comes in and the rich guy, how you're supposed to make it an even playing field inside the church. So he's just emphasized a lot about doing Christianity a certain way. And some people might be thinking he's out of balance. And some people might look at us and say, you're out of balance too. Well, what is the right kind of balance? We want to look at that today in faith versus work. And James actually presents, this is really an easy text to outline, maybe not an easy text to understand, but an easy text to outline, because he presents three lines of argument. And the first argument he presents in 14 through verse 17. And then he closes in verse 17. So he says, so faith without works is dead. Verse 17. So that's the first thought unit. Then he picks up verses 18 through 20 with another thought unit. And that thought unit ends in verse number 20, where he says, okay, Oh, wilt thou say, O vain man, that faith without works is dead? So he comes back to the same theme, 17, 20. And then he comes the third line of argument, verses 21 through 26. And then he says in verse number 26, as a body without a spirit is dead, so faith without works is dead. What's he said three times to you? He's repeated what he wants you to get. You already know what the message is about. He says, the way he understands Christianity, your faith means nothing. If it does not have works, it is dead. What? How am I supposed to get that? Because, man, I'm big on Paul, and Paul's all about justification by faith. Let's get to the bottom of it. First argument, let's take a look. Number one, two kinds of faith. We find this in verse number 14. You know, I've done a little bit of everything. I've taught Sunday school. I've led a song. And I just got to figure out which parking spot I'm supposed to be in now. All right. Jumping around here. Chapter 2, verse 14. What doth a prophet, my brethren? Though a man say he have faith, have not works, can faith save him? So the first thing I want you to notice is James is introducing to us the idea that there are two different kinds of faith. How do you get that? The end of verse number 14 says, can faith save him? Some people would think, well, you know, James is saying he's questioning whether faith is even good enough to save, but you just got to work for your salvation. This isn't what he's saying. In the original, there's an article before the word faith, which says, can that faith or this faith save him? Or can such a faith save a guy? Well, what faith is he must be talking about more than one if he's identifying the faith can save him, right? So what faith is he talking about? Well, in verse number 14, he says, what doth it profit, my brethren, though a man say, keyword say, he have faith? This is a faith that speaks. You know how some people are. They are all talk and no action. There are people like this. They just talk, and they never come through. I used to work with a guy like this on break time at our workplace, driving forklifts. He'd be describing this big, beautiful ice cream sundae. And he would have us at Baskin Robbins getting the triple three-decker layer scoops of ice cream with whipped cream and cherries on top. And he just talked this thing up. We never once went out for ice cream the way he described. Never once had it. He was all talk and no action. There are some people, that's their faith. Boy, when they're at church, they're all, man, I got great faith, man. I love Jesus. And man, they're just talking and they're just going to town about how wonderful it is to be a Christian. And they're all talk and they are no action. So there are some that say they have faith. That's one kind of faith, a faith that has absolutely no backup for it. So one kind of faith is all words, no action. Then he says, next he said, some say that there's a faith without works. I think the next words in the verse, I'm sorry, have not works and have not works. That the man who says he has faith and has not works. So we're going to call this the second kind of faith is the faith that works. So you have a faith that speaks, all talk, no action. And then a faith that works, somebody that actually follows up what they say by what they do. Now, in case you're having trouble getting this, and maybe you are, James gives us an illustration. I'm so thankful for pastors that tell stories. I like to sit in sermons where I hear stories. I like to preach sermons where I tell stories because that helps people stay engaged. James is a good pastor. He says, now take this. You're at home one day, someone knocks on your door. It's a poor guy. All right, so put the poor man, he's in front of you. And he's saying to you, he's destitute, he's naked. It doesn't mean literally naked. He's just destitute of basic essentials for survival. He doesn't have the right kind of clothing. All right, and he's destitute of daily food. The guy is needs clothes, and he needs food. What are you going to say to him? What are you going to say? Are you going to say, depart in peace, be ye warmed and filled? You know, man, I'm so glad you stopped by. I just want to say something to you. I really believe God's big, and I believe he can help you, and I want to pronounce a blessing over you. I want to say, be warmed and filled, depart in peace, everything's going to be okay because God takes care of his children. And with that, you close the door. Is that what you're going to do? For crying out loud, you would not do that. If you knew the guy was in need, he was asking, you would find some way to give him a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, a ham sandwich, or whatever you had on the dinner table that night. That just makes sense. You wouldn't say, just be warmed and filled. You would actually show him what he needs or give him what he needs. So question, here it is. Is speaking a blessing over the needy enough? It's obvious. No way. If you really care, you're going to do something to show it. So, is it enough to say that you have faith? And the corresponding truth is, of course not. You have to do something to show that you have faith. James has made his point. There are two different kinds of faith. There are people that talk about faith, and there are people who actually show their faith in the actions that they do. So what kind of faith do you have? James brings it to conclusion, his first line of thinking or argument. Even so, faith. If your kind of faith, if it doesn't have works, it's dead, being alone or all by itself. Now I bet at this point in your Christian walk, you've noticed some people with dead faith. Do you know what I'm talking about? They sat in church with you. They professed having met the Savior. They walked the old sawdust trails the old preachers used to talk. Come down an aisle. They talked to somebody. They made a profession of faith. But as far as where they're living now, you wouldn't know. You can't find them with the other members of God in the house of God on Sunday. You find that when you're around them, they like to cuss and it comes out of their mouth pretty easily. You find that they seem to be annoyed when you bring up God or ask what God's doing in their life. They seem to be annoyed by that. And you're scratching your head. Is that the real kind of faith? Shouldn't faith have an impact on how you live? So we would call these professing Christians, but not possessing Christians. We would say that they're big on words and little on works. So what James is looking for then in the church is, don't tell me how much you care. Show me how much you care. Don't just talk to me and tell me that you believe. Show me. This is what James is concerned about. So what kind of faith do you have? Do you have a talk faith or a show faith? Is your faith speaking or is it working? And it's the difference between true Christianity and the false. Well, if you didn't get the first line of thinking, maybe James will help you with the second line. First, he starts with two kinds of faith. In verses 18 to 20, we have now two paths to faith. Now, James is hitting his objectors head on. The objection kind of goes like this. Let's just go ahead and read verses 18 to 20 to start with. Yea, a man may say, thou hast faith, and I have works. Show me thy faith without thy works, and I will show thee my faith by my works. Thou believest that there is one God. Thou doest well. The devils also believe and tremble. But wilt thou know, O vain man, that faith without works is dead? He's coming back again, verse 20, to the point of the message here. Faith without works is dead. This time he asks in a question. But the objection goes kind of like this. You know, there's two kinds of people in the world. Not everybody sees it. There are different kinds of Christians in the world. You know, some kind of see it, you know, faith, and some kind of people see it like works. And hey, maybe there's a way just to kind of, we don't have to, you know, split hairs over this thing. You know, some people, they're weighted over on the work side, and there are other people, and they're weighted over on the faith side. James, I don't know that you really need to make such a big deal that faith has to have works. I mean, some people are just more word-oriented. Some people are more work-oriented. Just have some liberality. Let's not just get all upset about this. You know, what's the big point? So James is responding to that kind of accusation that he is being too narrow in his focus. But could it be this way? Could somehow some Christians be different from other Christians? Does it really have to be the way James is saying? So this is what the argument that he's dealing with now. And he's going to bring up two paths to faith. The first path we see in verse number 18, a man might say, you have faith. Well, they're faith people. They really believe faith is important, whatever that person says. And so the objection goes on in verse number 8, show me thy faith without the works. All right, you're a faith person. You just show me the faith the way it works for you, and I won't worry about it so much. This was the rally cry of the Protestant Reformation. This is what caused Martin Luther to post his 95 theses in 1517 on the Wittenberg Church outlining grievances that he had with the Holy Roman Church. Eventually, he didn't intend to. He meant for these things to be resolved within the church. They could not be. Eventually, he pulls out as a priest away and starts what becomes known as the Lutheran Church. Wasn't intended to be that way. He wasn't trying to build an empire. They just ended up naming that after him. So Luther becomes a champion of its faith. And it was Romans chapter 1 and verse number 17 where he reads, and he's studying the book of Romans, and Romans says, "The just shall live by faith." And so, boy, he's big on it's faith alone, apart from all the sacraments of the church, apart from penance and communion or Eucharist and matrimony and last rites, apart from all of those sacraments, it's just faith. So, you know, maybe some people are just more Luther-like. We just need to have some flexibility. They're faith alone people. I get that. On the other side of the grid, there are people, they're works people. Man, they're working hard for Jesus. Bless God, they're doing the bountiful baskets on one Saturday. And the next Saturday, they're on a mission trip to Mexico to build houses. When they get back, they're over at the soup line for the gospel rescue mission. They're serving. Man, they understand something. When it comes to Christianity, they ought to be working for it. And so, what do we get here? Oh, let's skip that. Let's go on to the next one. My path is faith. Another good one says, my path is works. So they fit in with more like a Matthew 25 mindset. Let's bring that scripture up, a cross-reference here. Matthew chapter 25, verse 35 and on. For I was hungered. Jesus is talking about a parable. I was hungered, you gave me meat. I was thirsty, and you gave me drink. I was a stranger, you took me in. Naked, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you visited me. I was in prison, and you came unto me. Then shall the righteous answer him, saying, Lord, when saw we thee and hungered and fed thee, or thirsty and gave thee drink? When saw we a stranger took thee in naked and clothed thee? Or when saw we thee sick or in prison and came unto thee? And the king shall answer and say unto them, verily I say unto you, inasmuch as you've done it unto the least of these, my brethren, you've done it unto me. Jesus highlighted the importance of works. And there are some groups of Christians, man, that is the passage they live in. I am going to show, I'm not going to talk about it on Sunday, man. I'm going to get out in the streets. I'm going to get my boots on. I'm going to get dirty for Jesus. So maybe there just are these works people, and we should be a little bit more gracious to them. In the end, verse 18, James says about them, I will show thee my faith. How? By my works. Well, there seems to be these two categories, two ways to express faith. Those who express it by saying, I have faith, and those who work for it. All right, well, James is going to cut through the quick of thinking that there are multiple paths by giving you another illustration. Aren't you thankful for pastors that tell stories? Now, here's the second line of argument, two paths to faith. Well, which one is it? Well, James says, I want you to consider the demons for just a moment. You remember those rascals? They're always trying to mess up Jesus' ministry. You know, and what was Jesus doing? In the Sabbath, in the synagogue, on the Sabbath, cast them out. Another time he meets the maniac of Gadara. All right, here's the one. I brought up two references. One is in Mark chapter 1. This is the man in the synagogue saying, he says to Jesus, let us alone. What have we to do with thee, thou Jesus of Nazareth? Art thou come to destroy us? I know who thou art, the Holy One of God. James is recalling this. Remember the demons? They got it right. When they saw Jesus, we know who you are. You're the Holy One of God. The demons got it right. Maniac of Gadara, chapter number 5, same book. The maniac. This is a guy who's cutting himself with stones. He's unclothed. He's running around wild in a graveyard. He meets Jesus. He cries with a loud voice and says, what have I to do with thee, Jesus, thou Son of the Most High God? We later read in that passage that Jesus cast out a legion of demons into the swine, ran down to the steep, into the ocean. Well, here, two different scenarios. When we meet the demons, they get it right. Now, the Pharisees, they can't make up their mind who Jesus is. They don't know. You know, maybe he's just a bastard, a son of a fornication between a Roman soldier and Mary. That's what they're thinking. The demons always got it right. They had faith. They believed in Jesus, the Son of God. But here's the thing. Did it do anything to change their behavior? Did they say, oh, you know what? You're right. That's the Son of God. Can we come over to your side because we're tired of working for the devil? Any of them do that in the New Testament? It did not happen. So apparently then James is saying, hey, the demons believe, they even tremble, but it doesn't change how they behave. So you can't just have faith by itself. Your faith has to work. It has to change how you live, or you have nothing better than the faith of the demons. Whew. So what are you going to say, a vain man, or empty, or shallow man? You're going to make a case for just being a faith person? No, James says, no, faith without works is dead. He comes back to his point one more time. So Christians need more than faith. They must have works as well. So inside, if you're a Martin Luther kind of Christian, if you're a Paul kind of Christian, you're just like, how do I put this together with faith? When I became a Christian, I believed in Jesus Christ as my personal Savior, who died on the cross, even though I never saw it, rose again, I believe it happened, and God said my faith in the sacrifice of Jesus is sufficient to make me right with God and secure me a place in His eternal home of heaven. You saying that's not the way it is? Is James teaching me something different? The best way I know how to illustrate this is for you to understand that the two are not mutually exclusive from one another, but they're mutually belonging or mutually dependent upon one another. And to illustrate this, I think the best thing I can do is talk about marriage. I know a little bit about that because I've been married for a little while, all right? So let's talk about marriage for just a moment. This should help clarify where James and Paul are when it comes to this deal of faith and works. Now, it's been about 18 years ago, but I do remember the marriage ceremony, and I can almost walk through all the steps in my mind. If I have any doubts, I can put in the video and watch it again. I know what happened on my wedding day. It was June 16th, 2001. And I stood before a church and a pastor and a group of public witnesses, and I pledged my undying devotion to one woman for as long as we both shall live. I made the promise. In fact, I did more than make a promise in the ceremony. Part of our ceremony, before we lit the unity candle, we actually went onto the platform to a little podium and we signed in the presence of witnesses the marriage certificate. That's often done on the side. We did it right in the ceremony. All right? So, I mean, I not only said it, I, with my own John Hancock, put it on a piece of paper, I'm married. Wow. But is that all I have done in my marriage to indicate my marriage since? No, since then, I have also taken this woman with me wherever I've gone in the country and sometimes the world, and she has followed along. But I've also taken care of our needs. We have used our money together to buy groceries, to pay bills, to buy a house. And I have shown through 18 years my devotion to that woman. That really is the proof that I am married to her. It's not a certificate. It's not a ceremony. It's the way I have lived for the last 18 years. I have never shut her out of the door, locked the door, and told her not to come back. You're not welcome here. I have not done that. Why? Because I pledged my undying devotion to her, and now I am living my undying devotion to her. Now, does that mean that the ceremony and the certificate are meaningless? I mean, after all, you've lived with her for all these years, and you've proved how dedicated and loyal you are, then certainly that should be enough. Then we could just skip the ceremony and the several thousand dollars we dropped that day. The answer is obvious. Both are necessary. Absolutely, both are necessary. You need the ceremony. You need to sign on the dotted line. This is honoring to God. Common law marriage is not the way it's supposed to work. I am supposed to commit with my words. I will be faithful to you. But that's not enough. I have to live it by daily being faithful to her, by keeping myself only under her for as long as we both shall live. Which one is necessary? The answer is both. Which one is necessary to you? Do you just have to believe into Jesus and become a Christian? Yeah, you have to do that. But is that enough? No, if you spoke words of devotion to Jesus Christ by faith one day, then you will live that out every day in devotion to Jesus Christ. Marriage to me makes this passage absolutely clear. It is faith and works, not faith apart from works. Well, now you're muddling up the waters. I mean, some people are going to think they can work their way into heaven. No, what makes me married? What makes me married? I pledged, I promised, I can show you the marriage certificate, I am married. So I have a date, my spiritual birthday. I met Jesus Christ, I pledged my devotion to him, I acknowledged that I was a sinner, that he was the only one who can save me, and that day I got married to Jesus Christ. May 6, 1987, I was 13 years old. I can take you to the very spot, this very day, if we had the time and the finances to do it, I could take you there. I had a wedding with Jesus Christ. But that's not really the proof in toto that I'm a believer. You've witnessed it in my life as I have lived before you, Jesus Christ. We all have that responsibility. So James concludes the second section then. O vain man, don't you know that faith without works is dead? Now, if we were to make a similar inspection of your life, could we find both elements? Do you have a marriage certificate with the Lord? Now, I'm not talking that marriage is a picture of salvation in the Bible, and I don't have a literal certificate, but I do have a wedding date when I met Christ, and I invited him to be my Savior and Lord of my life. Do you have that? It's not either or, it's both and. And this is James' point. You ought to have a life that mirrors what you proclaim with your mouth. Don't just tell me, show me by the way you live. Jesus taught the very same thing. Matthew chapter 7. Many will say to me in that day, Lord, Lord, have we not prophesied in thy name? And then I didn't cast out devils, and then thy name done many wonderful works, and then I'll profess unto them, I never knew you. You did the works, but you didn't have the faith. Both are essential. So I hope you have both parts. And if you're not sure that you have the wedding day with Jesus and the life to back it up, it might mean you're not in the faith and not part of the family of God. And there shouldn't be anything you should be more concerned about than to get that settled. Third line of argument. Two kinds of faith. Faith that talks, faith that works. Two kinds, or two paths rather, of faith to faith. Well, I'm just going to be the faith guy. And over there, there's some work guys. No, you can't exclude them from one another. It's both and, not either or. Final point. This is so helpful. James lays the argument of Old Testament witnesses when he talks about two of them in the last section. The last section of verses 21 through 26 talk about Abraham and Rahab. These are two great outstanding champions of the faith. Now, Abraham's at the top. He's the father of the Jewish nation. Rahab, she kind of snuck in the back door. She's a foreigner, a prostitute to boot, and yet the same thing operates in her life, and she becomes part of the chosen people of God. Well, let's look at this. Let's look at Abraham. James is asking you, hey, I've made my argument, faith without works is dead. I've shown you the two have to go together. One without the other doesn't make sense. Well, does this really play out in history? Is this what happened with Abraham? Well, let's look at Abraham, verse 21. Was not Abraham our father? Justified by works when he offered Isaac his son upon the altar? Seest thou how faith wrought with his works, and by works with faith made perfect? And the scripture was fulfilled, which saith, Abraham believed God, and it was imputed unto him for righteousness, and he was called the friend of God. Ye see then how that by works a man is justified, and not by faith only. Two times he said, justified by works. Paul would have a conniption, we think. But you know, if you rightly understand Paul, you don't have a problem with what James is saying. Now, what's James saying? He's saying Abraham was justified by works. But think about the logical sequence in the historical story, which isn't all laid out for us here, but I can fill you in. In Genesis chapter 15, verse 6, we find that Abraham believed God, the same thing as in verse 23, and it was imputed or accredited to him for righteousness. Abraham believed, that's faith, he became righteous. Then about 15, 20 years later, Isaac has been born, and God says, now I want you to take Isaac up, and I want you to sacrifice him on a mountain I'm going to tell you of. Whoa. This is the son of promise. But Abraham nonetheless obeyed, and he went and offered a son almost to the point of killing him until God stopped him. But how did he show his faith? He didn't just say he believed in God. He showed it by obeying when it came to Isaac. Obedience really is the expression that you really believe, that you're doing the work. And Abraham did that. So which came first? His faith. What followed? His works. And you see how faith married with his works brought his faith to completion. The word perfect in verse 22 means to reach the finish line, to reach its completion. Now, would he have been saved without offering Isaac? Yeah, he believed God. He had righteousness. But his faith reached maturity by obeying the Lord. So why does James use this expression, justified by works? We need to talk about this a little bit, then we'll be through. Justified by works. It seems that Paul and James are against one another. In fact, several passages. One of those is Romans chapter 4, verse 5. Paul says, it's all of faith, not of works. To him that works not, but believeth on him that justifieth the ungodly, his faith is counted for righteousness. James would agree with that. Did he not say in verse number 23 that Abraham believed God and it was credited to him for righteousness? James believes in salvation by faith alone. But James is not willing to stop there. He says you actually have to go home and live with the woman and take care of her for the rest of your life to show that you really meant what you said on the day you got married. That's what he's saying. So you got Paul and James. Give me these bullets, please. If you think of it this way, it'd be helpful. Paul's primarily thinking of justification by faith at the starting line. When you start the Christian life, I get in by faith and I become righteous. James is primarily thinking about justification by faith at the finish line. When you get the end of the Christian race, you ought to be able to look back and say more than, oh, I got married about 35 years ago to Jesus Christ. Remember that? Can you see that, God? That way back then, that's when I got saved. No, James says. You've had 35 years, which you've claimed to be a Christian. There ought to be enough evidence at the end of your life to say, there's no doubt in my mind, this man was a believer because of the way he lived. So Paul primarily focused on the start of the Christian life. James is thinking of it primarily at the close of your Christian life. And I believe that's true because of verse number 13, in which he talks about the judgment of God that's coming. Verse 13 of this text said, he shall have judgment without mercy. He is thinking ahead to the day of judgment and a man having something to show on his day of judgment. So this is the difference. James is not saying people get saved by works. He is saying at the end of your life, there ought to be enough evidence to convict you. In fact, I think I'm already getting into my application. As you think about your own life, would there be enough evidence if you were put on trial, that you are a believer, not just from what you said you happened when you were in the third grade or when you were 9 years old or when you were 17 or when you were 25 and someone led you to Christ. Is there enough evidence in your life now to say, that's a Christian if I ever saw one. Man, he goes to church when the doors are open. That guy prays over his lunch every day at work. That guy reads his Bible when he has free time at work. And that guy, yeah, there ought to be some evidence to back up the profession of your lips. Hey, is Abraham the only one? He gives one more example. Two examples, two people of faith. Rahab's the second. Rahab is a lesser known figure. She figures only in the book of Joshua. Joshua and Israel are about to conquer the land. She lives in a house on the wall. Two spies come from Israel to kind of survey the thing before Israel attacks the city. She takes the two spies in. And she had a choice. And she lived in Jericho to protect her own neck. She could have turned the men over to the authorities. Hey, got the spies right over here. They don't know, I'm telling you, but you better get over there fast. They're here to spy out the land. She didn't do that. Her works indicated that she was siding with God because she hid the spies in the flax on her roof. And when the night fell, she let them down over the wall so that they could escape. The one thing missing from Rahab's example that isn't from Abraham's. Abraham, faith is mentioned in James 2, but not with Rahab. But if you go back and look at the story, you see that Rahab also believed before she acted. She believed and she worked. Joshua chapter 2, verse 10. These are Rahab's words to the spies. We have heard how the Lord dried up the water of the Red Sea for you when you came out of Egypt, and what you did to the two kings of the Amorites that were on the other side of Jordan, Sihon and Og, whom you utterly destroyed. And as soon as we had heard these things, our hearts did melt, neither did there remain any more courage in any man because of you. For the Lord your God, he is God in heaven above and the earth beneath. The way she knew how to express it, she said, I believe in your God. Your God's powerful. I'm siding with him. I'm protecting you. She had faith and she had works. You look at it in the Old Testament. It's not the works that saved her. It was her faith. But then her faith did get to work. For far too long, the church has been gullible, I think. We believed everybody who says that they made a profession, that they got saved in vacation Bible school or Sunday school, are Christians. Certainly, we need to be more careful. Some who claim to be Christians, some who say they're Christians, are not Christians because their works don't follow. Even Jesus said in Matthew chapter 7 and verse 20, by their fruits ye shall know them. So James reaches the end of his third argument and comes to his third concluding point. Verse 26, for as the body without the spirit is dead, so faith without works is dead also. It's not what you say, but what you do that proves that you belong to the family of God. So don't tell me you believe. Show me you believe. This is James' argument and ought to be our argument today. Some people reach the end of their life and they get a little panicky. They get panicky because they want to leave something behind and time is short. They want to leave a legacy behind. I did this. I accomplished this. And we read it sometimes in the obituary. This man belonged to the Kiwanis and the Alliance. And he was chairman of this board and that board. And, he military cadet, served in the military, won this war. We're looking for legacy. We're looking for meaning. We're looking for value in the works that we've done. In the Christian life, we too ought to be leaving a legacy behind, not of all these awards that people look at us, but all the things that we've done to magnify the name of the Jesus Christ whom we serve. Just yesterday, I popped into Safeway to grab some groceries. I don't always do this, don't always have the opportunity, but I did take a tract from my pocket and tried to hand it to the clerk at Safeway and said, here's a little pamphlet. Don't know if you've given much time to think about God in your future, but this little pamphlet describes how the Bible says anybody can go to heaven who's right with God. Would you take that? And after trying to get that message communicated in a few short sentences over the noise or the roar of the checkout scanners going beep, 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 beep while I'm trying to talk, he eventually got the message and he said to me, he said, yeah, but it's important how you live too. So I did invite him to church and I did talk about faith, but I just said, you don't even have to come to our church, but if you just take Christ, I mean, you could be part of the family of God. Well, it's important how you live too. And you know what? I was thinking about that in relation to today's message, and it is important how you live too. He was right, but he was also wrong. Because if it's just up to how you live, ain't none of us getting in. It's faith and works are both present in your life. If not, if you're more like James talks about in verse 18, if you're the faith Christian, one leg. If you're the works Christian, one leg. You only move forward in the Christian life, though, when you walk. Faith, works, faith, works. Both are essential. I hope they are part of your life. Father, thank you.